Welcome to the Classical Happy Hour. I'm your host, Martin Davids. This is the show where my guests and I talk about music while enjoying a tasty beverage. Then we try to play some music together. Today's guest is Heather Miller-Lardon. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Marty.
Awesome to have you on the show. So for people that don't know you, can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing for work these days?
I live in the suburban Philadelphia area, and I freelance there as a Baroque double bassist, and also in Boston, where I play with the Handel and Haydn Society.
Cool. So how did you end up playing the bass? Did you start on the bass? Like, I've talked to a lot of bass players, and they all seem to say nobody else would do it, or...
Well, you know, it is a little bit like that. I wanted to play violin when I was in elementary school, and my parents said, no, we're not going to pay for that, cost too much money. And at my school, everybody quit by the sixth grade, and the teachers came to our classroom and said, who wants to play bass? We'll give you one, and we'll give you some free lessons. So I raised my hand and said, yes, absolutely, I will do it. And here I am.
So you liked it right away, or...
No, I hated it. It was awful.
But it was free lessons?
Pretty much. I just kind of always wanted to play a musical instrument, and I stuck with it for the first year, and then I was going to quit, and my teacher at school said, well, why don't you just stay for the first week and see how you like it? And we were playing in seventh grade orchestra, and I thought it was really fun. So, again, it just happened. It was my lucky day.
Someone's lucky day. Okay. So, like, do you come from a musical family?
No, not at all. Except for amateur musicians, some of them, but most of my family has nothing to do with music. So I was just very lucky to be in a school district where they had that opportunity for us to learn to play.
So, like, a lot of families have, like, an expectation of what kids are going to do. You know, certain fields seem more likely than others, like the family business or... You know, if your parents are both scientists, they might think you might go into science or something. So, was there any thought of some other career path for you, or did you always want to be a musician?
I think my parents would have liked me to have been something like a doctor or a lawyer, but they did say, the only thing we care about is that you go to college, and what you want to do is up to you. So I felt very fortunate to have at least had that much support from them.
So, just go to college?
Just go to college. I think music was not what they had in mind. And my father, for a long time, used to say to me, when are you going to get a real job?
Well, hopefully he's not saying that anymore. But did you want to be a musician? Like, when you were, like, in high school, did you have some kind of vision for what you're going to do with your life, or...
There was a point, I just kept joining ensembles and playing in youth orchestras, and there was a point where I started looking around and thinking, there's all these people that are going to music school that are around me, I wonder if I could do that. And I would kind of talk to my teachers and see if it was a possibility, and it started to look more and more like it was something that I could do, and then I realized there wasn't anything else that I wanted to do. So it wasn't really a plan, it just sort of happened that way.
So, like, everything else just fell away, and you were like, this is what I'm, where I'm going?
I just kind of threw all my eggs in that basket, yeah.
That's cool. So, like, how did you get into Baroque bass? I mean, no one's teaching that in seventh grade.
No, they definitely were not, although I do that with some of my students. I had some opportunities when I was studying at the Curtis Institute to play Baroque music in chamber orchestras, and we did have one professor who was doing some historical performance practice and had us listening to very early recordings and trying to play Vivaldi without vibrato and using portamento in Wagner, things like that that were completely new to me, and I thought it was amazing to try those things out. So those were some of my most intense musical experiences when I was in school. And after I graduated, I was freelancing in the Philadelphia area, and I happened upon a job that was all period instrument players, but I didn't know it. Someone asked me to sub, and I just showed up with my modern bass and my steel strings, and people started to play Beethoven, and it didn't sound like anything I had ever heard before. And by the end of the first rehearsal, I was sold. That was the thing I was going to do. I didn't know that people did that and in this country. And I just did everything I could to try to find out how to do it myself.
Cool. So did you like go back to school to learn historical bass, or how did you do it?
Well, I did go back to school. It wasn't specifically for historical bass. I got a degree in historical performance practice from Cornell, because in my undergraduate work, I didn't do a whole lot of music history, and I felt like I needed to get a little more background.
So like what kind of stuff were you studying at Cornell?
I was really lucky to be able to study viola da gamba, and then I did sort of my own curriculum with double bass playing and historical performance practice classes with the musicology students. They let me come up with my own projects and work with ensembles at the school and get some students started playing viol. So I got a lot of experience both teaching and performing and creating programs and projects.
So, like the double bass, I feel like even professional musicians don't really know that much about it. Like, it's just like a big violin family member. And like, can you describe like what is it, and like what are the differences between like a Baroque bass and something a jazz guy plays?
To be honest, not a whole lot of difference. There's just subtleties. The instruments look a lot the same. They function similarly. In fact, a lot of jazz players use gut strings, or have in the past, because it's got a beautiful, warm sound. But the differences between Baroque violin and Baroque double bass and the modern counterparts are not all that different. It's the bass bar is going to be lighter, the neck angle is going to be shallower, and then we have obviously the gut strings and a lot of the more cosmetic things. One of the big differences on my instruments is that I use frets, and the frets are tied at half tone intervals throughout the neck up to the neck block. So there's seven of them. And what they do, they do give some indication as to where you should put your fingers and help with intonation, but they also act as a false nut. So they make every string that you play sound like it's an open string. You get a whole lot of resonance that way.
So is it louder?
Is the Baroque bass louder?
Or no, is it louder having frets on it than if you took them off?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that they are, and you're able to keep the strings a little bit higher so you can get a little more tension on them that way. And because the strings are so thick, it prevents them from buzzing as much as they might otherwise. But not all bass players in the 18th century used them. Some people really didn't like them, so it's not really a matter of authenticity. It's just something that I particularly like.
So if I go see a Baroque orchestra, like, not all the bass players are going to have frets. Some might, maybe none will, or maybe
exactly.
All of them will.
Yeah, and they might even be using different tunings within the same orchestra, especially for later music. I just played a concert where I was using a tuning that was, we call it Viennese tuning. It's thirds and fourths, F, A, D, F sharp, A from the bottom up, and a sort of standard double bass tuning is E, A, D, G, and you might find both of those tunings in the same orchestra. It kind of covers all the bases, so to speak. You have like a lot of the notes on open strings. It can sound really amazing.
So like, would you plan that out with your section? Like, who's gonna tune what way, or do people just make their own decisions?
Well, it usually comes out in the wash, so they might make their own decisions, or they might we might chat about it in advance and say, hey, what are you going to do here? What are you going to do there? It's just fun to experiment with that.
So, like, is there a standard tuning for the instrument?
If there was one, it would be the most common one, E, A, D, G, from the bottom to the top in fourths.
So, is it, I want to say, like more of an orchestral instrument than other members of the string family, or is it suitable for everything?
Well, the nice thing about the bass is that all music has a bass in it. So you could say that it's useful for whatever you want. I mean, in my world, it's mostly an orchestral instrument, but it can be used obviously any number of ways.
Yeah, but like you don't hear too many like sonatas for double bass and continuo kind of thing. Or...
Well, maybe you don't, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I'm asking. No. Are there a lot of those or...
No, we don't have a huge solo repertoire, especially a historical one. You find things that are written by composer performers, like say Bottesini. We have a few concerti. We have, in the 18th century, there were tons of concerti, maybe I want to say in the neighborhood of 30. I should know the answer to this, but I don't. For the Viennese double bass, in fact, Haydn wrote one that's now lost. It's kind of a shame. So there was a little golden age of that, but even with all of that, it's more of a contemporary thing. There's a lot of amazing music being written for double bass today.
Like solo?
Solo repertoire. It's being added to chamber groups. There's a lot of people writing for sort of standard chamber formations that used double bass in the past. Like there'll be people writing things with the Trout Quintet instrumentation or the Beethoven Septet instrumentation that includes double bass, and they use it more as a soloistic instrument, or they can if they want to. And it's really exciting to see what's being done in that arena.
So they'll be like, okay, we've got this famous quintet that's got bass in it and these other instruments, so let's have a concert where we compose a piece for the same people.
Exactly. So you can, you know, utilize the people that you have for the whole concert.
It's a lot of pressure on that composer.
I think they like the structure sometimes.
Yeah. You gotta have some limitations, otherwise what are you gonna do, right?
Exactly.
Anything could come out. Okay, so like what instruments do you play?
I play, in addition to modern double bass, I play Baroque double bass, Viennese double bass, which is that 5-string instrument I was talking about. I play what we call G violone, which is an instrument that is the double bass member of the viola da gamba family. It's got 6 strings. It's also fretted and tuned with thirds and fourths, G's on the outside. The D violone, which is the same thing, only it's a fourth lower. Have I said
so
them all?
Is that bigger?
It's bigger, usually bigger or a little bit bigger. They can vary in size. There's no standard size for these instruments. They... were really very experimental even when they were built, had to do a lot with what was available to the maker and what the person commissioning the instrument wanted out of it.
So you play various types of bass and also the viola da gamba?
That's right.
Okay. So, you know, with violin playing, there's like not that many ways to hold the bow. I mean... There are some historical ways that not a lot of people do anymore, like with your thumb on the frog, or, you know, there's even like thumb on the frog, pinky underneath the screw and stuff. But with the bass, aren't there like kind of 2 schools of holding the bow? And do you guys all use like similar bows, or are there a variety of bows?
Oh, good question. So the 2 standard bow holds that we use today are called overhand, or some people call that French style because of where it was popular, and underhand or German bow. So, and you'll see that in those areas of the world. And they are both, I would say, equally popular depending on where you are. In the United States, where I was trained, everybody played French bow. And so that was what I learned originally. And now, because you see in iconography and paintings and drawings of people playing in the 18th and 19th centuries, more people were playing underhand, at least that you can see. It doesn't mean that they weren't playing overhand, but you see quite a lot of people playing underhand. And so I also learned that way of playing after the fact.
And that's, of course, how everyone plays the gamba, right?
That is how everyone plays the gamba, but it's a little bit different because on the gamba, you're holding the bow, you're controlling the sound with the hair, which is not how you play, obviously, violin or double bass on the standard bow holds.
So with your German grip, you're not touching the hair with your fingers?
No, I'm not.
You've got like a big frog you're just gripping.
It's a giant frog, and it's a really, a very wonderful tactile feel to just pull the bow and scrape the string that way. It's thought that playing overhand, you might get a little bit more finesse and you're using gravity coming from above the string. But when you're behind an instrument that's like a human size, it's not the same as where you're holding a violin in the air and you're going on top of it sort of horizontally. The weight goes in a different way. So it's kind of how bass players can get away with using either hold equally successfully.
Yeah, it's just not the same force of gravity when you're behind it.
No, it's sideways.
Yeah. Okay. So are you teaching at all these days?
I do teach. I teach privately in my house. I teach little kids all the way up through, I think my oldest student at the moment is 78. And I teach at Temple University, where I direct the early music ensemble, and I teach online as well.
Cool. So are there a lot of women bass players, or is it like unusual for women to play the bass?
Ah, you went there. Yeah. No, it's not unusual for women to play the bass, but it's more unusual for women to continue to play the bass professionally. When I was studying, there were a lot of young women playing when I was in high school, when I was in college, and the further you go on, the more you see women not so frequently in the field. I would say it's harder for them to get jobs, or you don't see them as much getting full-time jobs yet, but there are more and more of them. As a matter of fact, a female bass player just won an international Bach competition, which is really amazing. Nina Bernat, we're really excited to hear about that. So just looking forward to watching women take over more and more in our field.
Yeah, it's great. So like the Handel and Haydn, are you the first female principal double bass player they've had?
I don't know the answer to that question. It's possible.
So do you know who was principal bass before?
Oh, yes, it was my wonderful colleague, Rob Nairn.
Oh, okay, I know Rob. Yeah. Then he went off to Down Under.
He went back to Australia, so it's our loss and my gain.
Nice. Well, anyway, congratulations. I know we celebrated when you won the job. Remember that?
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
Okay. So, do you have any advice for young musicians?
Advice for young musicians. Well, one of the things I often say is there's so much room to be the kind of musician that you want to be. So for those who aspire in our field, I think to pay attention to what things bring you great energy and great joy. For me, it's always been teaching and playing in this historical style. Those are the things when I found them, I was more awake and more alive and more myself. And those were the things that I put my energy into pursuing. And whatever that is for you, I think you want to pay attention to it and you will be most successful that way.
Okay. So look for the thing that really attracts you and just dive in.
Yeah, I think that's a sign for yourself that's where you're going to be most able to learn what you want to learn. You're going to be most motivated and you'll find a way for yourself if you really care about those things.
Yeah. Instead of trying to force yourself to do something you don't really care about.
Exactly. Sometimes people think, oh, you're supposed to get an orchestra job, or you're supposed to get a teaching job. But there's a lot of different ways that you can make music work in your life.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, most of the people I've had on the show are pretty unconventional in their careers. And I'm trying to get a few more people on with like normal jobs.
I love it.
Okay. Do you have anything interesting coming up? I mean, obviously, we've got this great, these concerts this weekend with Brandywine Baroque.
Oh, yes. Well, I can't really even think beyond that. I'm so excited to play the Bach Double Concerto with you and Edwin this weekend. And I just love playing these Christmassy Baroque concerts this time of year.
It is really fun. Okay. And finally, is there anything you want to ask me?
How did you make this drink? It is delicious.
I've a lot of practice.
I'm very impressed. I am really looking forward to the cherry at the bottom of it.
All right. Well, thanks for, you know, making time to hang out with me after rehearsal tonight. And thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe to the podcast. And, you know, order all my stuff on bachfortwo.com. And keep listening. And we'll be right back. We're going to take a little break and then come play some music. Do you want to try this next piece too?
Sure.